All right, then. Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome. We start hour number two. It's going to be a really good hour. My man Ben Mesrick will be in studio shortly. Program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Coming off a solid first hour, I talked about Toronto getting it done last night. Had a lot of help, mostly from Drake, who was rubbing people up during the game on camera. It's really weird, but it worked. We had Cube on, Ice Cube, rapper, actor, producer, Big Three founder. Ben Mesrick is supposed to join me right here in studio next segment. He's got a brand new book out. Now, you clones love Ben. You're all about the way he writes, what he writes about, his franchises, movies. And Ben is all about you clones. And I'm really anxious to get him in studio, get caught up with him, and talk about a brand new book he's written. It's called Bitcoin Billionaires. Next hour, Calais Campbell joins us. We are 30 days off to the smack off. 1-800-636-8686. If you want to win that thing, you got to be in that thing. If you win that thing, you make $5,000 and you win the most important one we've ever had. The 25th, the silver anniversary. Biggest day on arguably the most important sports talk show ever. Yeah, totally up to you. Your opinion. That'd be my opinion about it being the most important sports talk show ever. I know it's the biggest day of the show. So that's 30 days out. And one more time, 30 days does not mean 30 shows. It means 30 days. You're running out of time. You can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, let's talk some hockey. I'll be honest. You know I talk a lot of hockey on this show. I talk a lot of hockey. Postseason hockey, regular season hockey, NHL hockey. I love the NHL. I talk a lot of hockey. However, I do not talk a lot of St. Louis Blues hockey. In fact, if memory serves, in the early part of this season, the only time they got any run on this show is when they fired their head coach. And players got into a fight with each other during practice. And then this happened.
Crap in practice, the battle that was going on there. And you can expect a big game from Robert Bortuzzo here, who's got the puck now.
And he gets it in off the referee. It goes in, but that will not count. You can't score off the referee.
I mean, look at this bounce. I've never seen anything like this one right here.
And then somehow that puck deflects in, and Roberto Luongo's going, what in the world just happened there? As Robert Bortuzzo's shot goes off the referee, I think, then in the net, and the referee was in the corner. That's one of the weirdest goals you're going to see.
In tonight's game, rule 85-4, if a goal is scored as a result of being deflected directly into the net off an official, the goal shall not be allowed.
Yeah, what rule is it if the goal deflects directly off of the referee's junk into the net? What rule is that? Because that's what that was. That was Robert Bortuzzo scoring a goal off the referee's junk. An all-time great highlight. From the package to the back of the net. From the junk to the back of the net. From the unit to the back of the net. Normally, that would be the greatest moment of a season, especially for the St. Louis Blues, who we normally do not talk about. But last night changed all that, because last night, this happened. You heard that correctly. For the first time in nearly half a century, the St. Louis Blues are headed to the Stanley Cup Final. They beat San Jose 5-1. They wrap up that series in six. They went from being down 2-1 in that series to winning three straight. 2-1, 5-0, 5-1. They turned that from a battle into a blowout. The St. Louis Blues are going to the Stanley Cup Final. The thing about that, Alvin, is I thought that when I saw it last night, but I was not going to say it. The St. Louis.
St. Louis.
No, I'd rather lock in on the fact that they're doing something that has not been done for a half century, and people there are hyped. But nobody there is more hyped than Randy and Jason Sklar two very, very good friends of this program. What an enormous moment for them. They're huge St. Louis fans. They have been repping the Blues for years. Now they're seeing their guys go to the Stanley Cup Final. I mean, it's such an amazing story. When Pierre Maguire was on the show last week, I asked him about how badly the city of St. Louis wanted this, and for good reason. 49 years is a hell of a long time to wait for anything, and there's been a lot of heartbreak in those 49 years. Really good players who never got that great moment with the blue note on their chest. I mean, really, really good players. Kelly Chase. Does that name ring a bell? The Chaser. Kelly Chase was awesome. How about my man, Chris Pronger? And then came this year, and there was a buzz about the team before the season. There was a buzz, but then they came out and they fell right on their face. Again, a team that fired their head coach earlier in the year. A team that was tied with Ottawa for the fewest points in the league on January 1st. They were on the verge of being gutted and sold off for parts. And then on May 21st, they win the Western Conference. How does that happen? How do you turn around a season like that? You never know, right? But it's always something. A season like that can only turn on one thing, generally. You never know what it is. Maybe it's a big goal, a big come-from-behind victory, one big shift. You never know. But not in this case. In this case, it was a song. And not any song, a classic song from 1982. The Blues are doing something that they haven't done in 49 years. And it all is a result of one thing, one song. And of all songs, this song. You know that song. Laura Branigan's Gloria, if you need it. And you do. Because that turned around their entire season. And now that turned, they turned that tune into like some crazy anthem. Good luck getting that out of your head for the rest of the day. But then again, why wouldn't you? Why would you want to? I mean, sure, the Blues have amazing chemistry, and they've got a goalie standing on his head. But what they have more than anything else is Gloria. That's the real reason why their season turned around. You go ahead, you listen to that. I challenge you to hear that song and tell me your day's not better or your life's not better. It turned their whole season around. And the easy thing to say about this series is that it's San Jose just going San Jose the way San Jose always does. But that's not the case here. What? San Jose? I mean, they're powerless against a track like that. The Blues could have been playing the Islanders or the Oilers in their prime. But once you start bumping that track, the game's over. And if you think I'm making light of it, you don't understand how significant that was, how emotional that was. Kelly Chase was at that game. Kelly Chase saw St. Louis Blues legend Bobby Plager afterwards. The tears were flowing. Some of the toughest guys ever were bawling. Chase said, quote, I was in the hallway, and I'm looking at people crying in the stands, and I was like, holy bleep. Then I see Bobby Plager, and he started crying. He never cries. And that was just like, that one kind of kicked me in the balls. Such an awesome quote. Then Brett Hull saw Plager crying. And then he saw Kelly Chase crying. And then Hully started crying. Quote, but it was after it hit zero. You know, when the clock hit zero. When all of a sudden the flood of emotions hit me. And I looked at Bob Plager. And I'm like, oh my God. I watched Kelly Chase out here. And he was crying. I go, I don't know if I cried that much when I actually won the Stanley Cup. And we still haven't won anything yet. It's so exciting for this franchise and this city and the people and the fans to be going to the Stanley Cup Final. End quote. So you've got all these grown men crying all over the place. Some of the toughest dudes on the planet bawling their eyes out. History being made, tears being shed, Gloria blasting through the city of St. Louis. And I know my boys, the Sklars, have got to be breaking crap in celebration because the Blues are going to the Stanley Cup Final. Sure, I talk hockey. All kinds of hockey. Regular season hockey. Postseason hockey.
I love when you talk hockey.
But I never talk St. Louis Blues hockey.
St. Louis.
Never. Not unless a guy's getting fired early in the season when they're supposed to be one of the odds-on favorites. Or a guy is scoring a goal off the referee's package. But I am now. St. Louis, reaction.
St. Louis.
So I want your reaction to that. I want your reaction also to Draymond Green's. Draymond Lean. Dear clones, please give it up for Draymond Lean.
Please give it up for Vince.
Yours, Galactic Johnson. Brett from Bugaha. War Ross engaging in bad faith negotiations when he accepted Jim's job offer. So not only is the XR4TI still a story, former members of the XR4TI are a story. This came up because at the end of yesterday's program, I was going on about Ross, Robert Dasmati, who quit this show after like 7 weeks to go work for the Alhambra city government or wherever he went. Rome, Draymond Green gave up junk food, but he said the easiest one to kick was hot dogs. Stephen Phoenix, that's funny, Steve. Good one, Steve. Steve, one more like that and you're blocked. And notice, if you go to my Twitter feed, nobody's blocked. I've never blocked anybody because I really don't give a damn what you say or what you tweet at me. I mean, it's an open forum. I'll make an exception for you, Steve. Dear Jim, Draymond gave up Snickers and Cheetos. Who'd he give them to? Can I have them? Sincerely, Bruce Willpowerless. Jim in C-Town wore Doc Boudreaux. You're missing the point of the take. The point of the take was, if you losers are going to come up in here and kill people for gaining even a pound, never mind that you're probably all 40% body fat yourselves, that if a guy's going to lose weight and it's going to impact his performance positively, get up in here with the same intensity and give him credit.
Dr. Boudreaux.
Some freaking credit.
You give them some credit, I mean, for real.
Dear Van Smack, I gave up wine when I crashed through someone's living room and forgot about that case of Ripple in my trunk. Wine Searly. Billy Joel.
And he's talking with David.
Taylor in Lexington wore Keeneland. Hey, Taylor. You're in Las Vegas, one of my favorite towns. I expect a hell of a lot more from you. Man, do better. Be better. Do better. I expect that kind of crap from other people, but not people in Las Vegas. All right, come on, man. Seriously. One guy crashes one car into one person's living room, and you're never going to let him forget it. Who hasn't that happened to? Can't tell you how many times I've been minding my own business when somebody plowed into my living room. Jeff from the 919 tweets, a stash of candy under the bed. Maybe I should think about getting rid of my bedside fryer. Signed, Cheeks in Foodio City. A bedside fryer. All right, I'm going to effort my man Ben Mesrick because his content is so much better than any of yours. And he's got a brand new book out. The sun is shining. The temperature is heating up. That means it's finally grilling season. This season, eat like the party never ends with Kingsford. Grill burgers, chicken, corn, brats, ribs, all kinds of food with that mouth-watering, dyed-and-gone-to-heaven flavor that only Kingsford can fire up. Pick up a bag of Kingsford charcoal at your local retailer. Start something big. It's not a party if you're not eating good. And you're not eating good unless you're eating food good with Kingsford. It is the grilling time of season. Kingsford. Check it out.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. All right, we are live in tower number two, and I love this moment. Now, listen, to be really fair about all of this, I try to be as objective as I possibly can. I need to be objective about everybody I talk about, the things I say. I can't get too close to these guys because I need to be objective, and you never know what you have to do. I consider my next guest a very, very good friend of the program. I consider him a very good personal friend. He has been so good to us. He is a jungle legend. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is author of Bringing Down the House, The Accidental Billionaires, The 37th Parallel, and Wooly, to name just a few. His books have a combined printing of more than 4 million copies. A man who has declared that his next book will be about, wait for it, Toby in Houston, which I will get to. He's got a brand new book out. It drops today. It's called Bitcoin Billionaires, A True Story of Genius, Betrayal, and Redemption. The book is out right now. You clones love him. You love his brand. You love his franchise. And he made a point to come to Southern California to start the tour in this studio. Ben Mesrick is my guest. Ben, it is so good to see you. How are you?
I am psyched, Jim. And I came out to L.A. and I came down here because you launched my career, Bringing Down the House. It was almost 2 decades ago. And it was the clones buying that up and hitting Amazon and rising me up there that led to everything. So I am thrilled to start here. It's awesome.
Ben, it means so much to me that you always say that, and that's never been true. I don't know why you keep saying that. But I want to say from me to you, though, when you consider the success that you've had and the amazing heater that you're on right now, that you always come back and you pay that respect to the clones, it means so much to me. And you chose the jungle for your first interview. Your first interview after Bitcoin Billionaires comes out. How is life for you on the very first day after the book comes out? What's that first day like?
You know, it's exciting and you're nervous about it because you have no idea how a book is going to, you know, how people are going to respond to a book. You know, when I sat down to write this book, I knew that there's a lot of controversial stuff in it. You have no idea how it's going to be accepted. So it's thrilling. The first day of a book tour, you don't know if it's going to be an explosion or it's going to be back to the drawing board. But I think this is a big story, and I was excited to do it. So I'm just excited.
I think this one's going to be really, really big. Ben Mesrick joining us. So when you get into the background of the book for a moment, this is a book that features two people that you have written about before, Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, who were part of the Accidental Billionaires. Now, first, when you first met these guys and they first walked into a room, what did you think?
Yeah, so the Winklevi twins, when they walk in, it's quite a sight. Now, maybe it's because I grew up on 80s movies and the John Hughes movie, but they walk in and you immediately think they're the guys dressed in the skeleton costumes chasing the Karate Kid around right. The gym. I mean, they're jocks. They're the quintessential big alpha, jackasses. You look at them and you think, and so when I wrote Accidental Billionaires, which became the movie The Social Network, I think that was the angle we took. They were the bad guys. They were chasing lovable Mark Zuckerberg, who was this, you know, likable nerd around, and they were automatically the bad guys. And I think I got that wrong, to be honest. I think The Social Network was not a fair portrayal of the Winklevi. And that's part of why I wrote Bitcoin Billionaires. It's this amazing second act that you never see coming.
All right, so you laid that out. Like, you thought maybe you were off on that. Maybe they were not who you thought that they were. How did they react to how they were portrayed in the book and in the film?
Right. And let me just add that in high school, I would have been terrified of the Winklevi twins. I would have been hiding in a locker from the Winklevi twins because that's how they appear. So when they saw The Social Network, they actually came to the premiere. They were my secret source on that book. I used to meet them in Penn Station in stairwells, and they would hand me stacks of legal documents that nobody was supposed to see. They weren't probably supposed to be giving me them because they hate Mark Zuckerberg so much that their goal was to bring him down. So that's how I essentially wrote a lot of The Social Network or Accidental Billionaires. So anyways, when they saw the movie, they didn't love their portrayal, but they also saw parts of it that they agreed with because it was the first time someone was telling a story about Mark Zuckerberg kind of lying and stealing and things like that.
Ben Mesrick joining me in studio. Listen, if you've got a question for Ben about this book or any of his books, any of his movies, the telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. All right, so then about a year and a half ago, there's an article about them in the New York Times as the first Bitcoin billionaires. What did you think when you read that?
So I'm sitting there, and I see the New York Times article. It says, the Winklevi twins are the first Bitcoin billionaires. And I had heard of Bitcoin, as we all had. I didn't have any Bitcoin. I didn't ever want to write about it. People have been calling me for years saying, you should write about Bitcoin because it's kind of the stuff I write. But it just makes my eyes glaze over. The idea of like the blockchain and the word crypto, they make you want to throw up, I think. But after seeing the Twins were now billionaires, it kind of blew my mind. So I called them up and I went in. I went into New York and I sat down with them and I said, "What's going on?"
And what was that first call like? I mean, were you guys good at that point?
Well, you know, I'd run into them in restaurants a couple of times, and it's funny because they're always like sitting together and they dress the same and they look the same. And I'd run into them a couple of times at parties, and at one point,
in their skeleton suits,
I'll tell you, right, chasing me around. A few years ago, when Bitcoin was at like $5 or $10. The Twins had actually said to me, you know, you should buy some Bitcoin, put it away, and don't think about it. And I ignored it. And I would probably be a billionaire right now, too, if I had paid attention to what they were saying. So I sat down with them, and they were very open. They just started to tell me this crazy story, how they had accumulated 200,000 Bitcoin, 1% of all Bitcoin that will ever be. And they bought it at $7. So it's now, at the time, was worth $5 billion. Right now it's worth about close to $2 billion. And it was amazing because to me it was like they were the bad guys in one story and they were involved in Facebook and suddenly they're in the middle of this second revolution of money, which as I learned, as I dug into Bitcoin, I began to think is something much bigger than just something you gamble on. I think they were at the forefront of something huge and they've come back. And so I was blown away.
All right, so they've come back. Did your impression of them personally, morally, or ethically start to change? Did you see them in a different light?
It did. So I started hanging out with them every day. It was like the third Winklevi twins. I was going into New York once a week. And they're much different, you know, once you get to know them than just judging them. It's easy to judge them. They walk into the room, know them. They speak five languages. They're Latin scholars. They can computer code almost as good as Mark Zuckerberg. They understand economics. They're actually really smart guys.
Right.
And, you know, they had built themselves up in all of these different things. And then the Facebook story turned them into caricatures and into jokes. And so I absolutely changed my mind, not just about them, but what their role in the creation of Facebook was.
I was going to say, do you think, knowing what you know right now, do you think they were more involved in the founding and creation of Facebook than originally thought?
Absolutely. So look at Mark Zuckerberg, this nerdy guy, and look at the Winklevi twins. And which do you think is more likely to have created a social network?
Sure.
What the twins did, which was really intriguing, is they actually had the idea of these circles of friends groups. So you have your family, your friends, then your work people you go to college with. That came from their idea. They also had the idea of using a harvard.edu. You needed a Harvard email to join their site. And when Facebook launched, if you remember, it launched, you had to have a Harvard EDU, then you had to have an Ivy League, and then you had a college EDU, then a high school. So basically these circles of difficulty of becoming a part of Facebook, the exclusivity of it is why it immediately took off. And so those two ideas were the twins, as far as they say, and as much as I can tell from looking into it. And I do know now, and it's all in the book, there's these instant messages that Mark sent that were uncovered much later than when we wrote The Social Network, which actually say some very horrible things. Zuckerberg, you know, lied to them. He planned on screwing them over. You know, there's a scene in the book, it all comes out, but he actually hacked into their program and made a fake profile of Cameron Winklevoss through of all this racist, like sexist, crazy stuff. And all this stuff never came out. But as you look into that, you start to think, well, Mark might have had a plan to screw them over from the very beginning.
Ben Mesrick joining me in studio. All right, so what we're going to do...
By the way, Zuckerberg's not going to like that. This is the first time I've said it since the book came out. So
I was
going to
say, I have not heard that before, and he probably wouldn't like that. But if you don't want people saying things like that about you, don't do things like that, right? Ben Mesrick is a jungle legend. So what we're going to do, we need another segment. There's no way you can cover a book like this or have a sit-down conversation with Ben without doubling up. So we're going to come back and do another one. His new book... It's called Bitcoin Billionaires, A True Story of Genius, Betrayal, and Redemption. It is out right now. We talk about the genesis of Bitcoin. Exactly what is Bitcoin? People hear that, and they still don't really know what that means. We'll get into it. More about the book. If you've got a question for Ben, you know to hit us up right now. 1-800-636-8686. Ben Mesrick in studio. We come back. We do another segment. First up, here is a sports update for you. Rich.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I'm biased. I consider him a very good friend, personally and on the program. So I love all Ben's work. Love all of his work. This book is fascinating. brand new book. It drops today, Bitcoin Billionaires, a true story of genius, betrayal, and redemption. The book is out right now. Phone lines are open, 1-800-636-8686. All right, so Ben, we bring you back for another segment. Take a break from the backstory and the actual story. I need you to talk about Bitcoin for a minute.
Sure.
Because Bitcoin is one of those things that everybody's heard about, but not a lot of people or everybody knows exactly what it is, or maybe they don't want to sound ignorant, so they don't want to ask. For everybody listening, what is Bitcoin and how does it work?
Sure. So Bitcoin is digital money. What that means is it's computer money. It doesn't exist in the real world. A Bitcoin is something I can send to you without anybody in between us. So it's called peer-to-peer, which means person-to-person. There's no bank. There's no government. It's not backed by anything. So if I have a Bitcoin, I can send it like a text to you. I can send it anywhere in the world instantly. And what's interesting about Bitcoin is it doesn't need a government or anybody like that verifying this transaction. It's verified by all the different people in the Bitcoin world running this software. You don't really have to get into that part because that part gets really like math and glazes your eyes over. But what Bitcoin is that's interesting is it's something that's instantly transferable that doesn't really show who you are. I mean, it's somewhat private and that you can hold just by having a personal code. A string of numbers is your Bitcoin address, and that's where your Bitcoin is. So people can write it down on a piece of paper, keep it in an electronic wallet on your phone. Some people even imprint it on a ring or get a tattoo, and that code is your Bitcoin. So you could have $10 million on a ring, you know, and there's all these stories about people who like lose, you know, a computer card full of $10 million Bitcoin and are digging through a dump right now looking for their Bitcoin. It's like having all your gold in a safe that you can carry around with you all the time. But what's great about Bitcoin is that, for instance, if you wanted to send a dollar to someone in Africa, how would you do that? There's no real way to do that. But with Bitcoin, I could literally just text him a dollar. And that's what's cool about Bitcoin. What's bad about Bitcoin is that started off in this kind of dark world of like drug dealers, because originally people who used Bitcoin were doing a lot of illegal things with it because it was untraceable and there was no government behind it. So there was something called Silk Road on the dark web, which was a drug Amazon where you could buy any drugs you wanted on it, like buying it on Amazon, and they only took Bitcoin. So that's where the Bitcoin market first started. But now Bitcoin is at a very different place where all these Wall Street banks are looking at it, where people, you can buy things at different places with it, but also use it like gold to store money.
That's a brilliant description.
Yeah, so I don't know if it made it any clearer for you,
That makes it much clearer, yeah. I think, for people who do not know. Now, how about this? If you had invested in Bitcoin back in, say, 2009, any idea what that investment would be worth right now?
Yeah, I mean, so Bitcoin was in the dollars, you know, and even before that, when it started, it was in the pennies. There were websites called faucets that just sprayed Bitcoin out. You'd go on and you would just get Bitcoin. And Bitcoin has gone up, went all the way up to $20,000. Today, it's at $7,800 or $7,900. So if you had bought Bitcoin at a dollar, I mean, it was like a $7 million, you know, it's a crazy situation. The first Bitcoin purchase ever was this guy bought two Papa John's pizzas from somebody for 10,000 Bitcoin. And today that's worth almost $800 million.
Holy crap.
So he spent $800 million on two pizzas. And by now you'd think the guy probably killed himself. But it's a crazy amount of money that was made in this industry. And, you know, the idea of digital money, if it sounds crazy to you, but what you should know is that all your money is already digital. When you go to a bank and deposit $100, they don't keep $100 in a vault somewhere. It immediately becomes ones and zeros. It becomes computer money. How much cash do you have? You have maybe $1,000. If you're a gambler, you might have $10,000. But that's not your money. Most of your money, almost all of your money, is already computerized, right? Nobody really has any money.
I do that all the time. I transfer money. I bank online.
Everything's online. And if you think about the future, 50 years from now, we're not going to walk around paying for things with little strips of dead trees in a leather wallet. It's like medieval peasants, right? Buying butter with barter. We're not going to do that. We're all going to use our phones. We're all going to use a code. And so we're going to all be digital at some point anyways. Bitcoin kind of just gets there quicker.
We're talking to Ben Mesrick. He's got a brand new book out. The book is called Bitcoin Billionaires, A True Story of Genius, Betrayal, and Redemption. Again, that book is out right now. Ben, also, you've made the point that Bitcoin could upend the internet. How do you see that happening?
Well, what's interesting about Bitcoin is that there's nobody in the middle of it. What Facebook became was kind of this evil empire where data is controlled and collected, and they have a lot of control of what you do when you're on Facebook. In a similar way, money is controlled either by the government that backs it. So if you use American dollars, then the American government backs it. But if you're in Venezuela, your money is gone to hell, right? Because the Venezuelan economy fell apart. If the American economy falls apart tomorrow, the American dollar falls apart. But Bitcoin doesn't work that way. It's universal. It's peer-to-peer. It has nothing to do with any border or any individual country. So Bitcoin kind of frees you in a way. It's a libertarian. It started with libertarians and anarchists who thought this would upend governments. It would upend banks. Because once the government can't control money anymore, the government loses control over the people. I don't believe that. And I don't think the Winklevier guy, the guys in suits, you know, they're the men of Harvard. They think that Bitcoin should just be another financial instrument, a way of quickly paying for things or of storing money without having to deal with gold bars and things like that.
We were talking to Ben Mesrick. All right, because the clones are so about this. Let's go to the phones really quickly and see what they have to say. We go to Silicon Valley.
Uh-oh.
Will in Silicon Valley. You're on with Ben Mesrick. Will, how are you?
Hey, pretty good. Jim, great show. I'm glad
Thank you
have diversification here. So, and the reason, what I wanted to ask you was, you know, information travels in tight circles. So I was wondering how these East Coast guys got into Bitcoin so early. Are they just lucky?
Right.
You know, because I know I get into deals, but it's, you know, it's based on small networks, information. People are really tight-lipped about stuff. You have to know VCs.
Right.
I'm wondering how these guys.
You're exactly right. And that's actually the first couple
Good
chapters
job,
of the
Will.
Book.
Well done.
Yeah. So Bitcoin initially was these little crypto nerds were all into Bitcoin. It was on these little websites. It appeared out of nowhere in 2008. This guy calling himself Satoshi Nakamoto. No one knows who he is or if he even exists. Created Bitcoin and then vanished. The man's never been heard from before. He supposedly has 1 million Bitcoin and he's gone. So nobody knows what happened to him. The twins, they had settled with Facebook for $65 million. That $65 million, they took it in stock, became $500 million. So they had all this money and they tried to become Silicon Valley investors, but no one would take their money because Silicon Valley, everyone's end game is to sell to Mark Zuckerberg. And if you had the Winklevi on your spreadsheet, Mark wouldn't buy from you. So they went to party in Ibiza, as you do, right? They were on a beach in Ibiza and someone walked up to them and said, "Have you guys ever heard of Bitcoin?" And so it really started by accident. People recognized them from the movie The Social Network and just pitched the idea of Bitcoin to them.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's wild.
Just on a beach.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking to Ben Mesrick. Back to the phones. And this is something that's come up before. I'm glad I know where this guy's going and where he's going to reset. PJ in Mile High. PJ, you're on with Ben Mesrick. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, guys. How are you?
Good.
Excellent. Good. So two things that always come up when I'm reading the books, Ben. How do you? I'm wondering how you gain access to and earn trust with the individuals who share this information with you from Chuck in the 37th parallel, who at times was being followed around by some of these crazy federal agents, to the Winklevoss twins sharing with you potentially damaging information to a mogul like Mark Zuckerberg, up to these Bitcoin creators who started doing illegal activities.
Yeah.
How do you gain their trust? And then are you ever apprehensive about sharing the information that they share with you?
Yeah, it's a
Good
great question.
Questions. Yeah.
I work my way into people's lives. I think I'm like, I don't show up with
or
a tape recorder.
Or they worked their way into your life,
one
too.
Or the other. I mean, I think Janet Maslin in the New York Times called me a billionaire's best friend because I'm not trying to bring people down in my stories. I try and dive in head first and become a part of the story. I don't have a tape recorder or a notepad. I kind of live with the characters. I work my way in with them. I want to, you know, and in the end, they trust me to at least handle the story as truthfully as possible, but also in a fun way. And so there's a type of character that I think I appeal to, you know, someone like the Winklevi twins or Chuck, and, you know, they want to hang out with me and tell me their stories. They're dying to tell their stories. Now, the fearful part, absolutely. There have been a lot of moments in my career where I've been terrified for my life. I've stepped into something that I did not want to step into. I mean, I wrote a book about Russian oligarchs, and there were moments in that story where, you know, I sincerely could have been killed if I had printed the stuff that I had found out. And I just don't print that stuff. I mean, I'm very careful. But in general, you know, like the Winklevi twins, Bitcoin, there's definitely an unsavoriness to some of the characters, and there's drugs and things like that. But these are smart guys. They're geeky guys, most of them. They're people who are involved in something they really believe in, but they're not out to kill anybody. But you have to sort of always know how to get out of the room. I think growing up as a weak, small person, I always know how to run out of a room really quickly. So if something really bad happens, I have my exit path already ready. I think that's it's genetically inborn in me, the idea of escape. I can always escape.
Ben Mesrick joining us. I love that line. You got to know how to get out of a room.
All right.
So we're rolling through these calls, and the clones are showing up in a really impressive fashion. Two good calls in a row. Let's try another one. Let's see if we can play a hot hand. We go to, look at this. He's won the smack off twice. Lef in Laguna. You're on with Ben Mesrick. Lef, what's up?
Hey, not much, Jim. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Ben, two-time SmackOff champ, Lef Laguna here, big fan. Quick question. Hypothetically speaking, if you were to invest in Bitcoin today, do you think eventually you'd be able to afford a home in, say, like Corona, California, that doesn't have power lines and dead grass in the backyard? I'm just asking for a friend, so I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, and I know you know the show, yeah. Bam, but he just took a run at his arch nemesis, Brad in Corona. Corona, according to some, I'm not saying it may not be the most desirable place to live.
All right,
it's in the 909 area code.
Yeah.
You don't need to answer that question.
No. Well, listen.
Or you can if you want.
I will say that buying Bitcoin right now, I'm not someone who's going to tell you whether or not to buy Bitcoin. The twins believe it's going to go to $250,000 a coin. Other people believe it's going to go to zero. So you have to look at it and decide, is this gold? Is this the next gold? Or is this something that just disappears in 2 years? And I don't know how to answer that. I thought you were going to ask about Toby in Houston.
I think that was going to get there.
Yeah, all right,
so
that
Toby.
Was going to go that way.
So Toby, now what about Toby? You have access to a lot of people. How are you going to find Toby?
I will say.
Where would you start? How are you going to approach this?
I spent way more time yesterday looking into Toby in Houston than one should. Especially on the first day of your book tour. But I had never seen the word crank used in that fashion before. And that's what intrigued me. I don't know if that is what stunned you, but I didn't know that that's what that meant.
That's tremendous. So what started you down that rabbit hole? A few of the clones.
The clones, I'll tell you, the clones are the best. They tweet with me. I love it. When Bitcoin Billionaires, when it came out, I know that they're going to be running to it. And last time my book came out, I spend all day just retweeting everyone who tweets. It's awesome.
I appreciate you doing that, too.
It's awesome. I mean, it's a great group, and it's my audience. And when I wrote this book, I really thought this is a book, Bitcoin Billionaires, that they're going to like, because it got all of those elements to it. And then it has the Winklevi twins, which you really can't even invent if you wanted to.
Love the Winklevi. And listen, I want to manage our expectations, but I can't lie to you, Ben. One of my favorite things is when you come on and the book drops and you can track. Obviously, you can track how the book does after your first day or your first appearance or when the clones start to do what the clones do. This is when, I don't want to say there's a love and hate relationship with the clones, but I love the clones always, but I do have to check them. But there are times when they make me very proud. And when they rush out and they buy your books and there's a measurable, quantifiable difference, that makes me proud.
It runs up Amazon. The clones buy it, and all the New York publishing houses are like, what happened today? What did you do today? And I was like, I went on Rome. I was going Rome.
That's great. That's Ben Mesrick joining us. Before you go, back in March, Jordan Peele tweeted, feels like The Social Network is due for a sequel. What was your reaction when you saw that tweet?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of talk, actually, from Scott Rudin and Aaron Sorkin, who did The Social Network, about doing a sequel. You know, Zuckerberg, this is another crazy part of the story. The whole thing switched on its head. You know, Zuckerberg was the revolutionary, the good guy, and the twins were the bad guys. Today, Zuckerberg's the bad guy with this evil empire, and the twins are the good guys with Bitcoin. So that flip, it will make a great movie. And there's a place for a sequel to The Social Network and also Bitcoin Billionaires. It's almost like the Marvel Universe. You know, you have the Avengers is The Social Network, and then each character is its own little Wolverine. But yeah, we'll see where it goes. It's exciting. And I have to ask you about your book. When I come on every time, I try and push you in that direction.
I'm as close as I've been. I have changed representation.
Oh.
So we should talk about this.
So we should talk about it. I still feel
like if I couldn't afford you then, I can't afford you now, Ben, but maybe.
Well, my books keep going as high as they go on Amazon after going on your show. It definitely, I think
the
your
price
book
is going up. All right. Ben Mesrick is a jungle legend. You want to get this book right now. It's out. Bitcoin Billionaires. billionaires, they're like your kids. You can't play favorites, but this one might be the best of the lot. Bitcoin Billionaires, A True Story of Genius, Betrayal, and Redemption. It's out right now. Clones, go get it. Ben, I consider you a really good friend. I'm proud to be friends with you. Thank you very much. Great to see you.
You know what? It's an honor to do this first. I love it, man. Thank you so much.
Ben Mesrick made the point of coming to Cali to do this interview first. Can't thank him enough. Hour number three straight ahead. Clones, Bitcoin Billionaires, get it right now. We'll come right back.